time now is 3 o'clock, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO for Tuesday, August 20th. I'm your host, Lisa Fu. We'll learn about tonight's retro sci-fi movie at the Planetarium with guest Ken Fix. Amber Smith will be here with news about tomorrow's Healthy Body, Healthy Brain presentation. Eddie Reyes will be here to talk about Saturday's Uniting the Latin Community event at Sandy Beach. And Superintendent Glenn Gelbrick will be here to highlight the first day of school. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more, all on today's Juno Afternoon. First is National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Groups rallied Monday in Oklahoma in response to the Baby Veronica case. As KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports, those at the rally want officials to keep Native American interests in mind when making decisions for families.
The rally at Oklahoma State Capitol focused on the possibility that Veronica, the daughter of Dustin Brown, could lose touch with her Cherokee heritage if she goes to live with her adoptive, non-Native South Carolina family. Sarah Adams Cornell with the group Idle No More says the Indian Child Welfare Act is supposed to protect children in this situation, but the U.S. Supreme Court ruled this summer the law did not apply in this case. Adams Cornell is disappointed with the court's failure.
It's convenient to include Native people when it's fun or want a festival or a carnival or, you know, dancers and all of our regalia, and that's when we're included. And then when there is something very important to us in a matter like this, preserving our culture for our children and being able to keep our children, we're left out.
The two families involved in the custody dispute last week agreed on mediation in the case, but the details of the agreement are sealed. Veronica was adopted by a non-Native family in South Carolina. Her biological father, Dustin Brown, is a member of the Cherokee Nation. Brown argued in court he should have custody because of the Indian Child Welfare Act. A South Carolina court first granted his request, but because of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision, later awarded custody back to Matt and Melanie Capobianco. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney in Oklahoma City.
A Native educator is pleased with a move by Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber over an Indian mascot bill. KWSO's Will Robbins reports.
In 2012, the Oregon State Board of Education voted to approve a ban of the use of names like Warriors, Braves, and Chiefs in public schools and gave those schools until 2017 to make changes or risk losing state funding. This year, the Oregon legislature voted to reverse that decision and allow the names as long as schools that carried those names received approval from nearby tribes. On Friday, Governor Kitzhaber vetoed the legislation, asking lawmakers to consider changes. The action drew the praise of tribal people around the state. Siadam Edmo is with the Oregon Indian Education Association.
The presence of these mascots creates an environment where Indian students who are in the classroom feel alienated and objectified.
Governor Kitzhaber says he'd be okay with allowing schools to name their teams after a specific tribe, provided that that tribe gives its approval. That idea could come before lawmakers next February. In Oregon, I'm Will Robbins for National Native News.
As Canadians prepare for fall classes, an anti-bullying program is being shared in First Nations communities. Polly Dinetclaw has more.
In her more than a decade of being an advocate against bullying, former schoolteacher Susan Buchanan, who's Cree, has visited more than 300 First Nation communities across Canada. Buchanan's program through Clarion Consulting is called Stop Bullying with Social Skills. Buchanan says the program is used in Indigenous communities where children may suffer from generations of cultural assimilation and isolation. She says she was bullied in school as well as her children, so she created the program to focus on developing healthy classrooms.
The attendance has improved. The children feel happier, safer, secured. They also feel more comfortable in the school, and their academics have gone up.
Buchanan says the definition of bullying is the intent to cause physical and emotional harm to another person. She says children who have social skills are less likely to become bullies. Social skills like how to interact with other kids and emotional intelligence, which is being able to recognize the feelings of other people, are taught. The program aims to engage all community members. For National Native News, I'm Polly Dinetclaw.
During this month in 2009, Dr. Joseph Medicine Crow received the Medal of Freedom. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Right now, we have Ken Fix in the studio. Hi, Ken. How are you doing today?
Very well, Lisa. Thanks for having me on again.
So can you introduce yourself to folks who might not know who you are?
Well, I'm one of the volunteers at the Juno Planetarium. I've been doing that since the fall of 2010. And normally our programming is science-based, a lot about the planets and the stars, space program in general, space telescopes. But during the summer, we kind of retreat from that and do the retro sci-fi movie schedule, which we are finishing for this summer tonight with Star Wars Episode 4.
Wow. Okay. So why did you choose Episode 4?
Well, it was done in 1977, so we've kind of been doing some of the 60s movies earlier this summer, and I wanted to pick this one up from the 70s and do it. We still have, hopefully next summer, to get some additional movies in and do the programming that way, but since we're only running one a month, I kind of get to cherry pick the ones that I would really like to see and, you know, hopefully generate some interest in the planetarium and also keep people coming to the planetarium, even in the summertime, so that when we resume our fall schedule, you know, people are already used to programming being done every month.
Okay, so explain for people who've never maybe been to a planetarium or who haven't watched a movie there, what's the setting like?
Well, our summer setting is a lot more relaxed than what we do in the fall, where we have chairs and it's kind of structured and, you know, you're listening to somebody with a PowerPoint lecture for the most part. There may be some movie clips or something too, but in the summertime, we turn the projector system into basically a large drive-in movie theater, minus the cars. But I plug into the sound system, so all the audio from the DVD goes through the sound system designed for the planetarium, and basically it's the only time the sound system gets used is when I use it.
Okay, so you said that people can bring in kind of their own sitting instruments, or they can lie down?
Bring your lawn chairs, blanket, that's fine. It's a really relaxed atmosphere. I don't demand much, just attendance. And, of course, our admission to all our shows is free, including the summer movie schedule. Popcorn will be available for sale. And, you know, when you got to say, I'm going to go into a little bit of background that people may not know about Star Wars Episode 4, the first movie. This all came out of a genesis where George Lucas was enthralled with some of the early 1940s and 50s serials that were done for the movie theaters like Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers. In fact, he tried to buy the rights for Flash Gordon and do that, but when he made his deal with United Artists Pictures, it was a two-picture deal. The first one turned out to be American Graffiti, which was released in 1973. Big success. Only cost $1 million to make, and it made about $100 million in sales.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, while they were waiting for Graffiti to be released, he was working on an outline for what was going to be called Star Wars. And he had actually watched a Japanese movie that was called Hidden Fortress, and a lot of what he patterned the first Star Wars movie after was almost a direct ripoff of Hidden Fortress. So it's made by a Japanese director named Kurosawa. So I haven't really seen the movie, but I've just read about the different things that he pulled from the entire thing. Two bickering peasants wound up becoming the robots, R2-D2 and C-3PO. So you see those characters feature in all six movies. They're actually the only characters that will be in every movie.
Okay.
Some of the other characters are coming and going. At that time, though, he hadn't really conceived of it being a saga. He'd come up with a big, long story outline and decided that this one small segment, which then becomes the fourth episode of the entire saga, was the easiest to do. And he was being confronted with huge challenges at the time, production crew in London that really had no idea what he was doing. All they knew was they had people running around with guns and a 6-foot-tall monkey. And, you know, they were thinking that the whole thing was a joke. His special effects team had really no clear concept of what he wanted. It was only when he sat down with them later and cut together some World War II dogfight footage, you know, from actual newsreel, that they kind of got an idea what he was after with the spacecraft battles he was looking for. And, of course, a young filmmaker came in named John Dykstra, and he invented a camera that used a computer to retrace its moves. So any time that the computer made certain moves with it, you could add additional elements, recomposite those pictures, and make it one seamless sequence. So you could add several elements in, and the computer would track the whole thing. But again, it was done in camera with film. Nowadays, we do that with special effects done on a computer, and it's a lot simpler and takes a lot less time. So he came up with the idea for Star Wars, but right before Graffiti was released, Universal Studios passed on Star Wars, and they had like a 10-day option where they either had to tell him yes or no. And finally, they just said, no, we're going to pass on that. Well, Lucas went to 20th Century Fox, who was kind of hungry for, you know, a nice prospect for a movie. And he sold the idea for the movie based on talking to one of the, I guess what you'd call the executive producers there, the bankrollers, named Alan Ladd.
Mm-hmm.
So he sort of followed in on it, and he got what Lucas was telling him about the story. So he gave him the green light to go ahead, and based on the success of American Graffiti, which he only got paid $20,000 for, they gave him a $50,000 fee for writing the script and a $100,000 fee for director. But here's the key part, is George Lucas kept all the sequel rights and the rights for merchandising, including all the toys and anything else. He had those.
So it was a very shrewd move.
Yeah, so anytime you see some little kid playing with a Star Wars figure, George Lucas is getting a chunk of that sale, which was great. That's what made him a multi-billionaire. Eventually, cutting the story shorter here, he sold Lucasfilms, which not only includes the Star Wars properties but the Indiana Jones series, to Disney, who now owns the rights to those, and will they're already doing pre-production work on what's going to be Episode 7.
Okay.
So that's slated for 2015. Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher are back. Harrison Ford's a big question mark. He isn't saying whether he is or isn't, but I kind of got the feeling that he's already said yes and just doesn't want to let it out to everybody.
Okay.
But those, you know, those movies are, you know, iconic. Everybody can recognize actors and scenes from those movies, lines from the movies. And it all started in 1977, where the release generated about $750 million in sales worldwide. It is the sixth highest box office grossing film of all time. Surprisingly, Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, is the fifth highest gross of all time, but I don't think they got those inflation figures factored into what ticket prices are now versus 1977.
Very true.
So a lot more expensive to go to the movies now than it was back then. But very excited to run the movie tonight. It's not a real terrific-looking night tonight like last time when I ran Planet of the Apes. Hardly anybody showed up, but it was a great sunny day, so I'm assuming everybody was out having fun. Hopefully tonight everybody shows up. The planetarium is on Glacier Avenue. If you're coming from the valley, you make the left turn where the breakwater is, make the very first right, go past the fences, which is the soccer fields, and as soon as they stop, on the right-hand side, you'll see the walkway going into the Marie Drake Middle School building where the planetarium is. If you went past the Blockbuster video, you went too far. So all I can say is it starts at 6:30. Again, admission is free. It's an all-ages show. We will have popcorn available for sale. And again, a relaxed atmosphere. Hope people arrive, bring their chairs, bring their blankets, whatever they want with them, and have a good time at our last movie for the summer.
Wow. Thank you, Ken, for all that information. You got it all out there. Thank you.
Yeah, I got a limited time here, too. So, all right. Thank you very much, Lisa, for having me again.
So 6 o'clock tonight.
6:30, yes. And it runs 2 hours, a little bit longer with the credits. So 6:30 to 8:30, pretty much.
Okay. Seems like a perfect night to go watch Star Wars.
Should be.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ken.
All right. Thanks again.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your host, Lisa Fu. We were just listening to the theme song for Star Wars, which will be showing tonight at the Planetarium. We just heard all about it from Ken Fix, and it's at 6:30. I just wanted to talk about some Juno Parks and Rec news. The Wednesday hike for August 21st, that's tomorrow, is to the John Muir Cabin. Weather will determine final length and destination. Bring waterproof boots, and precautions should be taken for slippery boards. Wear warm layers of clothing and bring plenty of food and water. This is a moderate-level hike. Meet at the Spalding Trailhead at 12.6-mile Glacier Highway at 9:30 a.m. Carpooling is strongly recommended. No dogs or firearms, please, and have a great hike. Right now we have Amber Smith in the studio with us right now. Hi, Amber.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Can you please just let everyone know who you are?
Yes, I'm Amber Smith, and I work in the Juno office of Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska. And so we serve people with any sort of progressive dementia as well as their family caregivers.
Okay, and so there is a presentation that you're here to talk about.
Yes, tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, I'm going to be giving a presentation called Healthy Body, Healthy Brain. Because so often people are concerned about Alzheimer's disease and other changes in their memory as they get older, and they want to know, what can I do to lower my risk, to stay healthy?
Okay, so who should be coming to this presentation?
Anybody who wants to know how to keep their brain healthy for their lifetime. So it's free. It's open to the public. Everyone's welcome. We're starting at 6 o'clock in the first floor conference room at 3225 Hospital Drive. That is on the corner of Hospital Drive. It's the same building that has SAIL and United Way. Way back, it used to be the Family Health and Birth Center.
Okay, just to give folks a little better idea of what they'll be hearing when they come to this presentation,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by healthy body, healthy mind?
The presentation is really about brain health and how to lower your own risk of getting Alzheimer's disease or other thinking problems as you get older. Now, all of us as we get older have some changes in our memory. That's normal. But Alzheimer's disease and other cognitive impairment is not. So while there's no guarantee, there are some things that all of us can do that are probably things that we know, but that are easier said than done. So we're going to be talking about quitting smoking, to protect your heart and brain, talking about eating right, exercising, a few of those things, and trying to sort out what's true from all the hype that you hear in the news. So if you're like me, when you turn on your computer or open the newspaper, almost every day there's something like, eat this miracle food and you'll stay healthy, and it's really not that simple. I wish it was, but it's not.
Okay, so I had asked you before who should be coming to this.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't like to think about when they get older. For instance, I'm 32.
Okay.
Should I be coming to your presentation?
You certainly can. I think it's a good idea because the time to start staying healthy and protecting your brain is today.
Okay.
It's not once you start having Alzheimer's disease. Once you have Alzheimer's, there's no evidence that there's anything we can do to change that process in your brain. There's some medicines that help people with symptoms, but the time to start these good habits is today. And so we'll talk some about small changes we can make, because really it's some small things that we all could do that can make a big difference over the next 30 or 40 years for you.
Okay. And who will be giving this presentation?
I will be giving this presentation. And so if people have other questions, they can always give me a call. My number is 586-6044. And if they can't come to the presentation and want to talk about these topics, or if they're just concerned about their memory, if they're wondering, gosh, I forgot something yesterday, is this normal? Should I be worried? Should I talk to my doctor? Anybody can call me and talk about these issues.
Okay, so you're with the Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska.
Yes.
You have an office in Juneau.
Yes.
How long have you guys been here?
Gosh, we've been in Juneau since the 1990s, actually. We're a statewide nonprofit that started back in the 1980s by some sisters who were taking care of their mom. And they looked around for the support that they wanted, and they didn't see it. So when they were done with their caregiving, they decided to start this organization to provide what they had wished they had gotten. So we have offices in Anchorage and Fairbanks, the Mat-Su Valley, Copper River Basin, and then here in Juneau. And as I was saying, anyone can call up to talk about memory or brain health, get a memory screening. And we also provide public presentations like the one tomorrow night, and then more specialized training classes. So starting in September, actually on September 3rd, starting a six-week class, which is called the Savvy Caregiver. And that's specifically for family and friends who are taking care of someone who does have a progressive dementia.
Okay.
So we're talking about what dementia is, how to care for someone, and also how to care for yourself, because that's so important as a caregiver.
Okay. How did you get into this field?
Well, I actually went to medical school, and I did a residency in neurology, and I'm very interested in dementia. I trained with my neurology residency at a place that has an Alzheimer's and related dementia research center. And so when I moved here to Juneau and was looking around for a job 5 years ago, this position was open, and I love it.
So is there a population in Juneau that is being affected by Alzheimer's and dementia?
And related dementia, there is. There's a population everywhere in the country. There's over 5 million people in the U.S. who are affected. And we're going to actually see more and more people because the baby boomers are aging into the most at-risk age group, that 65 and older age group. That's a growing population. And we have a growing senior population here in Alaska. Just because not as many people are moving away, we want to stay in Alaska. We love it, and we want to stay. So since there's no cure, we're going to see more and more people. But I want to emphasize that even though there's no cure, it doesn't mean people can't have a great quality of life. With education and support, both them and their family and friends can have great lives.
Okay, so let's just go over, Amber, again. You're talking about two different things.
I am.
So the first one is a presentation.
It is. It's tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
6 o'clock at 3225 Hospital Drive, which is where my office is, in the first floor conference room. And that's about healthy body, healthy brain. That's about how to protect your brain as you age to lower your risk of getting Alzheimer's.
Okay. And then there's also this class.
There's another class that's coming up the day after Labor Day, and that is for family and friends who are taking care of someone who already has a progressive dementia like Alzheimer's. And that's a specialized class. It's limited to that group of people. It is free, but if people are interested in that, they need to give me a call so we can talk and get them pre-registered. My number is 586-6044, or they can look for me online at Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska.
Have you offered this class before?
I have. Actually, the Savvy Caregiver class I offer twice a year. It's a six-week curriculum, and it's actually a course that's offered around the country. So say if you were taking care of someone here in Juneau and you had a sibling who's in the lower 48, they could take the same curriculum. You could have the same information, and that's very helpful to people. I think with anything, you know, having information, having some training for this job that you're taking on is helpful.
Okay. Can you give us a little tease for tomorrow's presentation? Maybe without giving away too much, you know, what is one thing that we all can do to help us?
Gosh, one thing that you can do. I guess one thing that you can do, and you can start today, is to stay mentally active. And I want to emphasize, you do not have to do crossword puzzles if you don't like crossword puzzles, okay? There is no evidence. Every time I open the newspaper, it's like, oh, crossword puzzles. The truth is, you just need to do something that's different and new and challenges you. So get out, meet new people, take a class, read a poem, stay active. Right? Stay mentally active. Get out of your rut.
Okay, and that's also connected with physical activity as well.
It is. That's another thing you can do is exercise. Exercise has amazing benefits for all of your health, and it doesn't have to be huge. You don't have to have run the nifty 50, okay? That doesn't have to be your goal. I mean, kudos to you who did. But for the rest of us, if we just walked 30 minutes three times a week, it would be a huge benefit.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Amber.
Thanks
so
for having me.
Tomorrow night,
yes.
Healthy body, healthy brain presentation. Tell me the address one more time.
3225 Hospital Drive. We're right on the corner of Hospital Drive, same building with Sail and United Way.
And if anybody wants to contact you directly,
yes,
your number is
586-6044.
Okay, thank you so much, Amber,
thank
for that.
Thank you.
Great information. Right now, we have Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, August 20th, 2013. It was on this day in 1977 that Voyager 2 was launched by NASA to explore the planets of our solar system and to take the first close-up photographs of the giant planets Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. Just before the Voyagers took off, a committee of scientists led by Carl Sagan decided to put on board each Voyager a message from Earth in case extraterrestrials ever found them. At the time, the Cold War was at its height, and some members of the committee considered that these spacecraft and their contents might be the last traces of the human race left in the universe after a nuclear war. The Voyagers were each equipped with a gold-plated phonograph containing a variety of earthly sounds, including a heartbeat, a mother's kiss, wind, rain, surf, a chimpanzee, footsteps, laughter, the music of Bach, Mozart, and the Chuck Berry song, Johnny Be Good. Carl Sagan said, "The launching of this bottle into the cosmic ocean says something very hopeful about life on this planet." Today, the Voyagers have traveled farther from Earth than any other human-made objects in history. Both have gone well beyond Pluto, the farthest planet from the Sun. Voyager 2, launched on this day in 1977, is currently approaching the outer limits of our solar system, headed toward Sirius, the brightest star in the sky. It's the birthday of the Gothic horror author H.P. Lovecraft, born in Providence, Rhode Island. At the time, most horror stories were about ghosts and vampires, but Lovecraft wrote about his fear of modern science. He believed that people like Albert Einstein were learning too much about the secrets of the universe, and that those secrets could destroy us. He began to write stories about scholars who accidentally stumble onto the horrible knowledge of lost, monstrous gods. He began to publish his stories in pulp magazines like Weird Tales and Astounding Stories. He never made much money from these stories, so he also worked as a ghostwriter, and among his clients was the escape artist Harry Houdini. Lovecraft said, "The oldest and strongest emotion of mankind is fear, and the oldest and strongest kind of fear is fear of the unknown." And here's a poem by Robert Lowell entitled The Old Flame. My old flame, my wife, remember our lists of birds. One morning last summer, I drove by our house in Maine. It was still on top of its hill. Now a red ear of Indian maize was splashed on the door. Old Glory with 13 stars hung on a pole. The clapboard was old red schoolhouse red. Inside, a new landlord, a new wife, a new broom. Atlantic seaboard antique shop pewter and plunder shone in each room. A new frontier. No running next door now to phone the sheriff for his taxi to Bath and the state liquor store. No one saw your ghostly, imaginary lover stare through the window and tighten the scarf at his throat. Health to the new people, health to their flag, to their old restored house on the hill. Everything had been swept bare, furnished, garnished, and aired. Everything's changed for the best. How quivering and fierce we were, there snowbound together, simmering like wasps in our tent of books. Poor ghost, old love, speak with your old voice of flaming insight that kept us awake all night. In one bed and apart, we heard the plow groaning uphill, a red light, then a blue, as it tossed off the snow to the side of the road. The Old Flame, a poem by Robert Lowell from his Collected Poems, published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. This is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
It's about 3:32, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now we're welcoming Eddie Reyes into the studio. Hi, Eddie.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Thank you.
So you're here today. I know you've been on Juno Afternoon before.
Yes.
But for those folks who may have not heard you before, can you just introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Eddie Reyes, and I am currently the Managing Director for Help in Rock. It is a nonprofit organization that's here to provide services to non-English speakers, particularly the Latino community, but it's really for non-English speakers as a whole.
Oh, okay, great.
Yes.
And you're here today to talk about an event that's going on Saturday.
That is correct. That is correct. Our first event, we had July 20th. It was just to introduce our organization to the community. From that event, we were able to not learn, but just share with the community that, you know, whenever you're dealing with the Latino community, you're actually dealing with a group or a population that's made up of about 20 different countries. Most people tend to think that when you're dealing with Latinos, you're dealing with maybe Mexico, as is described as a Latino community. But in actuality, you have about 20 different countries. And here in Juneau so far, we've seen probably about 10 of those countries that are being represented by individuals that are living here now. So what we're doing is this Saturday, we're going to be having a picnic over at Sandy Beach. And the purpose of the picnic is to unite the Latino community as a whole. And, of course, everybody is invited. It is not just limited to the Latino community. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring these groups together. So this way we can find out what are some of the needs, some of the deficiencies, some of the things that are actually slowing them down, maybe stopping them from being able to get ahead and be successful and actually produce something for the community, give back, you know. So we want to be able to bridge that gap. Whatever it is, we want to find out. So this particular event, again, is to introduce or actually to unite the Latino community. And at the same time, we figured we'd take advantage of it and just have all kinds of different foods from these different countries, make it a little exciting while we're at it, you know. And we're gonna have some different plates from, you know, places like Puerto Rico or Mexico, the Dominican Republic, El Salvador, Guatemala, all these different places. So anyways, we're pretty excited. So it's Saturday about 12 o'clock. We're going to be there at Sandy Beach.
Okay, so you just mentioned some countries that you touched upon. You're saying it encompasses about 20 countries in the world, the Latino community.
Yes.
And you said that we have about 10 countries represented here, right here in Juneau.
That is correct, yes.
So who's going to be cooking this food?
Well, truthfully, what we did was we set it up sort of in a form of a potluck. So we asked these individuals from these different countries to go ahead and bring a plate on this particular event. We're going to have just different foods, and we're going to be surprised. We don't know exactly what we'll have there, but hey, you know what? We get to taste a little something a little different and just sort of bring you back to the culture where you came from, in a sense, you know?
Yeah. Will you be bringing a dish?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I'm going to work on that. I don't know if I'm a very good cook, but I will do whatever I can. I can tell you that we've been really blessed to have, just some of the different restaurants to also help us out. You know, we have some Filipino restaurants that we're donating some of the food. The Breeze Inn, it will have some burritos over there. I don't know if you've ever eaten there, but I love their burritos, I got to tell you. So we're going to have, I think it's going to be a phenomenal and awesome event. I think it'll be a lot of fun. Yeah.
Okay, so how big is the Latino community in Juneau?
Good question. Very, very good question. According to the Department of Commerce, there's about 1,500 Latinos here in Juneau. And, of course, sometimes I think that, people don't even realize that you have that many because they're scattered. And for a while there, no one even knew or no one even voiced out the fact that, you know, there might have been needs or that they were even around. So, you know, at this point, we want to make sure that begins to happen. So that this way, again, once again, we just want to make sure that everybody can succeed, you know, create a position of success for everyone. Yeah, so we have about 1,500, and of course, we're going to create some surveys in the process just to make sure we're extremely as accurate as we can be with those numbers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And have there been other events to unite the Latino community in Juneau before?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In the past, there were several organizations that were started. There's also some, you know, some Latino churches here. Mm-hmm. I know the Catholic Church, St. Vincent de Paul. There's also a Christian church over by the Church of God. I know that a Hispanic group gets together there. And the Nazarene Church, if I'm not mistaken, they also have a Latino group. But as far as a community, they did try to do that once before. Apparently, it wasn't successful, or they weren't able to keep it going. But hopefully, with a Helping Rock, which is an organization that's already been established out of Florida, we're a nonprofit organization, a 501c3. We went ahead and registered the organization here, and we have quite a decent backing to support the organization to make sure we can hold it up. They've tried it in the past, and we're going to make sure that this time around we're going to succeed with it.
Yeah. Okay, so this organization, Helping Rock,
yes,
you said is from started in Florida.
That's correct. And actually, if I go back a little further in history, it really started in the state of Maryland. But the foundation right now is currently out of Florida, and our organization is funded through thrift stores. But of course, out of Florida, not here in Juneau. So you know they've been able to give us some support, and of course we're going to have to develop that on our own here. So we are counting on the community. We're counting on different just financial avenues such as grants to be able to keep the organization going. And we are heading in that direction. So far, thank God. I mean, we've had a lot of support. Government is doing a great job. The city has been able to assist us just by providing services, and so I think that we're heading in the right direction.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we had talked a little bit before we went on air, and you said you moved here from Florida.
That is correct.
So, yes. Helping Rock, did they say you need to come to Alaska?
That's another sort of a unique story. I didn't come here with intentions of initiating Helping Rock here. I came here actually as a medical student to try to enter the Wambi School of Medicine in Anchorage, and I had to have a 2-year residency living in Alaska before I could enter in. So that's the reason why I came here. But while I was here, I taking care of business around town, I was able to see certain needs when I enter either the hospital or motor vehicles, and certain the court system, and I could see there was really a need for this organization to be developed because there was nothing in place for the community. And honestly, it really is sad. When I stepped into a particular place, I saw that there was an individual who didn't speak English, mm-hmm. and they were experiencing some frustration with being able to communicate with those individuals. And I saw that as a real sad situation because I realized that because of that, that individual may struggle in even being able to get a job or even understand which way to go, even with healthcare, all kinds of stuff. So we want to make sure that those gaps are we bridge that gap. That's what we're here for. So, yes.
So was starting Helping Rock in Juneau your idea?
Yeah, it was. It was. Actually, what I did is I contacted the organization there in Florida, which I was a part of the board there as well. So not it wasn't too hard to pull off, but and let them know, listen, there's a need here. And I got their support immediately. I worked as the director for Helping Rock down there. Mm-hmm. I'm no longer obviously the director. And so they felt quite a bit of confidence that, hey, you know what, if Eddie says there's a need here, let's go ahead and let's back this project up. And I got to tell you that there's an organization called the Coalition of the Willing. Mm-hmm. And they are also a Lower 48 organization. And what they did was they decided to get behind this project. It's composed of about 10 different nonprofits, and they are currently working on one of our grant writers, actually a part of that organization, and they're working on supporting everything we're doing here, and they're getting ready to actually send somebody here to assist us in what we're trying to make happen here. So we're really excited, very excited.
So it's going to grow, basically.
We have no other way to go. It's only moving forward. There's no backwards.
Okay, so you were talking about this event on Saturday, Sandy Beach, being very important as far as identifying issues or problems that the Latino community might be having.
Yes.
Why else is it important to stay united?
Well, people don't know that there's a need if there's not a big enough group to identify that need. So by us coming together, we're able to discuss with one another really what some of those issues are, and also and then at the same time have enough strength as a group to be able to voice out the need and someone, in a sense, take it seriously and realize, hey, you know what? There is a group out there, and they do have a need. If that unity wasn't there, I don't see that happening, you know? So this is a really important situation for us, and this is the reason why this is an important event and many more coming.
Yeah. Okay, so, and like we talked about before, who should be coming to this event?
We want to see everyone there. And, you know, I'll tell you one thing that's really exciting. If you have an interest in other cultures, some people choose to travel to other countries so they can learn about that culture. This is a perfect opportunity for you to be right here in your local town and surround yourself around a different culture, learn about those cultures. If you want to learn the language, good. It's a good opportunity for you to be able to do that, because in some of these events, you will have no choice but to learn through practical actions of just hearing somebody, and someone's going to try to encourage you. So it'll be really on a real positive team building. I think we can all learn from one another. I think it'll be a great thing happening.
And it's a family event.
It'll be a fan. Of course, it's for everyone. And of course, our focus is trying to, figure out the language barriers and issues there. But again, it is for the whole family. So you make sure you bring the kids. Let's just have a good time. Let's have a good time.
Great, Eddie. This is great. So let's just go over the details. Saturday from 12 p.m. to 5.
Yes.
Sandy Beach.
Yes.
Come and try some delicious food.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay, anything else you want to add?
Well, and I got to tell you, this is just, I know that in our culture, we have this thing where our hours are always mixed up. When we say it's 12 o'clock, to the Latino community, it means it's 1 o'clock. So, you know, I could foresee that happening. And when you get there, just realize that probably about 1 o'clock is pretty much when things will take off. But, yeah, absolutely, 12 to 5, come out. And if somebody desires to volunteer, I'm sure that we can give them a phone number. Please call us. We are in need of volunteers. We are in need of somebody to get behind that grill right now, because, of course, we'll have some hot dogs and hamburgers. So if anyone wishes to assist, please give us a call. And, of course, the number's there. I can say it out right now. It's 907-723-0837. And you'll be able to contact me right there. And please, by all means, help us out. We could use all the help we can get.
Okay. Thanks, Eddie. So that's for this Saturday, 12 o'clock-ish,
yep.
Sandy Beach. Come celebrate and enjoy Latin American food at Sandy Beach. Okay. Thank you so much, Eddie.
Take care.
¿Pa' qué andas diciendo que ya no te quiero? ¿Pa' qué andas diciendo que ya te olvidé? Yo nunca te he dicho que soy ni que valgo, que por tu dinero yo me enamoré. Yo soy de los hombres que sufro en la vida, y aunque me maldigas, yo te he de querer. De tantos desprecios que tú me has pagado, y así es mi destino, Dios sabe por qué. Triste es mi vida, vagar por el mundo, sufriendo y tomando por esa mujer. Qué triste es mi vida, pagar por el mundo, sufriendo y tomando por esa mujer.
y aunque me maldigas, yo te he de querer. De tantos desprecios que tú me has pagado, si así es mi destino, Dios sabe por qué. Qué triste es mi vida, vagar por el mundo, sufriendo y tomando por esa mujer. Triste es mi vida, vagar por el mundo.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Lisa Fu, and right now in the studio we have our guest superintendent, Glenn Gelbrick. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Lisa.
So today is a very special day.
It really is.
Why is that?
It's the first day of school. And it's the first day for all of the students in first grade through 12. Kindergartners will join us on Thursday.
Okay. So how did today go?
Oh, great. Yeah, really great. We had a chance to get to most of the schools today. We'll get to the rest of them as the week goes on. But lots of kids who are happy to be back, happy to see each other, and lots of moms who appear to be happy to have a little time.
So what did you do on the first day of school?
Today we delivered cookies to the staff rooms of each of our schools. So we started this morning at Auk Bay Elementary to be there for the opening, and things look great there. It's not finished, but it looks great, and progress is certainly being made. Families appear to be delighted with the changes, and the staff is very happy with the design. So we started there, and then we went on to Mendenhall River, spent some time there, also spent some time visiting with staff at Thunder Mountain and at Zantakahini, and then back to the office for a couple of things here, and then a couple of meetings left today.
So. Okay. And what was the energy like when you were visiting these schools?
It's always great. It's always a little bit like a family reunion where you haven't seen people for a long, long time and you're happy to see them. And so there are some staff who've been away for a part of the summer and or who have been here in Southeast and had great adventures, and lots of our folks fish in the off season, in the summertime. It's off season for schools. And so it's always good to check and see how their year went on the water.
I remember as a kid always getting that first day of school jitters the night before. Do you get those as a superintendent?
No. What I get is just the joy of the anticipation of that first day when the kids and the families are back and things are going into place. And what always seems like it just won't be ready, you know, lots and lots of our teachers think, you know, we just won't be ready. And then our veterans remind the newer teachers that the kids are going to come, however ready you are. So just enjoy it. No, it's not jitters. My jitters come later in the day when I want to make sure everybody on the buses got to where they were supposed to get.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. And did that happen?
So far, we're in good shape.
Okay, great. So what's been the enrollment like this year for the school district?
Well, it's too early to tell because we still have families who aren't quite back in town. We still have high school enrollments that we have to sort out. Those are the kids who seem to be the most mobile when it comes to in and out of town. So it'll be a couple of weeks before we know, but it looks like it's pretty steady.
Okay. And, you know, looking towards this first day of school, there were some reports that came out, ASPI.
Yes.
Can you explain to the audience what that is?
Well, it's the Alaska State Performance Index, or School Performance Index, I should say. And it's a replacement to the old AYP, or Adequate Yearly Progress State system. It's unique to Alaska. It's part of a waiver that the Department of Education has from the federal government. And the intent is to give families some indicator of the quality of their schools. in the old system, there were 32 or 35 different indicators, and if you got a no on any indicator, you got a no on the whole school, and if you got a no on the school, a school, you got a no on the district. And now what we have in place is a system that has a kind of an interesting calculation that takes into account student performance. It begins to take into account something we've been talking about for the last 4 years, which is student progress. And there's a pretty heavy weighting on not just that the kids are doing well, but they're making great gains. It doesn't matter whether the student is behind in their studies or ahead in their studies. The issue is we want them all to grow, and we want them to grow a lot. So it's pretty heavily weighted for that. Attendance is a factor. At the secondary level, graduation rate is a factor, and college and career readiness is a factor. There's a point total system that's calculated up to 100 points, and then there's a gradation of 5 stars.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're up in the upper 90s, you're a 5-star school, there are 4-star schools and 3-star schools. All of our regular schools are either 4-star or 3-star.
Okay.
And so they're all now looking at what are these indicators and what's the formula look like and where is it that they just missed. And I know one of our schools missed the difference between 3-star and 4-star was 22/100ths of a point.
Ooh.
On attendance.
Okay.
Right. And
yeah.
So it still comes down to you can be just a hair below the line, but it makes it look like it's one thing or the other. It's better than the AYP system. It still is a matter of doing what we've always done, which is to see how the kids are doing and ask the question, what can we do to help them do better?
Okay. And this was based on last school year.
Yes.
Okay. And I understand that part of this report requires that the school come up with an improvement plan.
Right.
And understand that that's something you guys would do anyway.
It is. It is.
So what are some strategies for going from a 3-star to a 4-star, 4-star to 5-star?
It kind of depends on where the area of growth appears to be. So if it's attendance, then it's outreach to families, it's checking in with kids, it's making sure that families have what they need in order to help kids get to school. If it's academic performance, then it's a matter of asking what is it that our students are struggling with. It's not just that we would say they're struggling with math. It's mm-hmm. what part of math are our students struggling with, and what can we do to improve our instructional strategies or supports for materials for teachers to use. So it really depends on where the specific area of need is. Then the individual schools' improvement plan, which they turn in anyway, as you said, Lisa, will be targeted toward those areas that are identified as needing to get better.
Okay, and I know parents may not have had a chance to look at this yet. They've been really busy getting ready for this week. I understand that you guys have an annual school summit.
We do. We have an annual school summit, which is basically a report to the community on how the schools are doing, and that is on September 25th, 6 o'clock. At Thunder Mountain in the auditorium there, and anticipate that it might take an hour,
mm-hmm.
But it's an opportunity for us to share information. About 18 months ago, the board adopted 7 key indicators of success, 7 key data points that we would internally gauge our progress on, and so we'll report to that. Each of those indicators, we'll report on progress related to the strategic plan. And obviously the notion of every one of our students graduating prepared to succeed beyond high school, how are we doing with that? And that'll be part of the indicators. But that's at Thunder Mountain on the 25th, 6 o'clock.
And before that, will there be some open houses at the school?
There will, and specific open house dates are available either by calling the school office or by logging on to each school's website.
Okay, let me squeeze in another question before we run out of time. How is the school nurse program throughout the school district?
What we've done is we've paired a school nurse with a school health assistant, and the two of them will share 2 schools. And so the school nurse will provide the more detailed medical support that requires the support of a nurse. as the school-based health assistant will do a whole lot of the some of the paperwork that they can do. There's certain things that they can't do, and so they'll basically be a partner with the nurse, and the two of them together will serve two sites.
They'll just travel back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. As you know, we're talking about the first day of school. What are your feelings about this upcoming school year?
Well, I think every school year when we begin is an exciting opportunity for us to use every available minute, every available resource to support kids. And, you know, our job is to continue learning. It's something we ask of kids, something we ask of our teachers, and it's something that we have to do in school offices and in the district offices to continue to learn and develop better strategies. So it's a great opportunity. I think school years are a wonderful thing. They're sometimes grueling, much like a school year is when you're in school. There's a lot of work to do, but it's an exciting time. Love it when the kids are back.
Thursday is the first day of kindergarten.
Yeah.
Any advice for those parents?
Bring the kids in, drop them off, and then hurry. hurry back to your car, because especially if your child is struggling, don't prolong that for them. But it's a great day to watch kindergartners come to school.
Great. Thank you so much, Glenn, for coming in today.
Very welcome. Thanks, Lisa.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO. For tomorrow, Larry Scanlon hosts. Kathy Hildre and Melissa McCormick will be here to highlight Juno's celebration of the Marine Highway's 50th anniversary. We'll get a preview of the kickoff Arts Council concert series with Jeff Connor of the Boston Brass. Pat Harris and Odette Edgar will be here to preview Saturday's Harvest Fair at the Community Garden. We'll learn about the Southeast Radiation Oncology Center. All that, Writer's Almanac, music, and more tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon. This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators in the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. An Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait here KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And Juno, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juno on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at KTOO.org. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Lisa Fu. Up next is All Things Considered.
We don't know what the evidence is. Till now, no concrete evidence has been produced or talked about. Much of it is circumstantial.
Murder charges against the former president of Pakistan, Pervez Musharraf.
It's Tuesday, August 20th, and this is All Things Considered.
I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Musharraf is charged with murder in connection with the 2007 assassination of Benazir Bhutto.
That story coming up. Also, Florida Governor Rick Scott is a longtime opponent of the health care overhaul. Now he's raising concerns about consumer privacy.
It is unclear how the federal government will protect personal information from being stolen or otherwise misused.
And one of the secrets of the late writer Elmore Leonard's success, listening.
People ask me about my dialogue. I say, don't you hear people talking? Well, that's all I do.
We remember Elmore Leonard after this news update.
From in-